Today's edition of the Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller podcast for the 26th day of February 2020. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Happy Wednesday to you. Welcome to the hump day. Welcome to the day where we all can start looking forward to, well, we always look forward to the weekend, but the day where it seems slightly less pathetic. Yes, slightly. Only slightly. Like I said, I'm Derek Hunter. I'm your host. Thank you for listening, tuning in, telling a friend, doing all that stuff, supporting the show on Patreon, sending me mail, sending me email, sending me whatever, your thoughts, your dreams, your hopes, your wishes, and things like that. I appreciate every last one of you because this show would be pointless. It would be just me screaming at cats if it weren't for you. Oh, what an action-packed night it was yesterday, for the day it was, really, for politics. We had a debate-ish. We had a slap fight. Democrats don't really fight. They don't really argue. They don't really do much of anything. They take ridiculous positions. And when they go at each other, it's like watching two cats sort of stand on their hind legs and swat at each other with their front paws, especially if they're declawed. The debate. We'll get into the debate. We have plenty of audio from the debate and a whole bunch of other things I hope to get to, but it just depends on how far out of control my mouth gets during the analysis portion of the debate, because, damn, it had potential. The debate was hosted by CBS News, and Nora O'Donnell and Gail King, Oprah's friend, was out there. They were the moderators for most of the debate. They were the moderators for the first part of the debate. Then they took a break, and suddenly, like, three other moderators from CBS News materialized as if transported in. They asked questions. Major Garrett was good. The other ones, I honestly don't remember anything about them. I don't remember anything about them. The black guy asked questions about race, and all the white candidates talked about how progressive they were and how easy they had it compared to a black person, and how they wouldn't have had it so easy if they'd been black. It's just the ultimate in pandering. It's so condescending. I know that black people can't make it in this country, and I know I only made it because I'm white. Oh, it's so horrible. Well, then give away your billions of dollars, Mike. If you feel so bad about it, hook some people up with some of your, spread your wealth around. Not on charitable causes that you can write off on your taxes, not on liberal advocacy that will help you during the Democratic primary. Just give people, you know, a wad of cash. Walk around with a Brinks truck in tow and random strangers, give them piles of cash. How about that? That was, you ever notice the liberals who are all like, oh, you got to be charitable, I'm going to give my fortune away. They never actually, they give, oh, we'll give it to organizations that help people. Okay, fine. Yeah, that's great. If you give it to a soup kitchen or something like that, giving $10 billion to climate change. Climate change is, first of all, there's not a real thing, climate change. It's not a person. You're not helping anybody. What you're doing is adding additional funding to something that is already overfunded. Can I just be real for a second? They always say the science is settled. The science is settled. How can you sit there and say anything other than that you cannot question the orthodoxy? The science is settled. Even talking about it at this point is ridiculous. Performing any semblance of, you know, the scientific method of posing a hypothesis and then testing it and trying to prove it, forget it. In climate change, you just make a declarative statement like you're transitioning your gender from one to the other, and it is done. It is done. That's it. Well, if the science is settled, if it's beyond reproach, if it doesn't, why are we studying it still? What's the point of studying it? Shouldn't we be past the point of studying it? Do we need yet another study on how climate change impacts the mating habits of northern red-tailed squirrels? Don't we have this ground covered? Isn't it, you know, all just universally bad? It's the conclusion that everybody says. It's the conclusion that they always draw, but then they always say, well, this will require additional study as conditions continue to worsen. Like, oh, additional study in scientific research is code for we need more money. We want more money. If it's settled science, and as every declaration that these people have made, it's all bad. It's all destroying the planet. We're all going to die because of it. Why do we need to keep studying it? Honestly, what do we need? The effects of climate change on this, the effects of climate change on that. It's all predictions. It's all soothsayer. It's all just a doomsday cult. It's 100 years out from now. We might not have any more monarch butterflies. Really, what are you basing that on? Well, we did some math, and you see, a computer model said that we might not have any monarch butterflies. So we need a $250,000 grant immediately to continue this vital research. I'm like, huh. Well, no, because if all science related to climate that comes down on the left is settled science, if it's done, boom, you've studied this one time. You didn't really study it very vigorously. You didn't study it very long. We're done, right? We don't need to. We can think of all the money we could save if we just said, "All right, we've got this all figured out. We've got this nailed. We no longer need to study this. Let's get down to the solution." What about that one, huh? They don't do that though, because the climate change industry, and it is an industry, only exists because of grants from the government, from private institutions that want to appear progressive. And guess what? When your field of study, when the funding for your job requires you to find a problem that you have to address or continue to study, guess what you find? A problem that you have to address or continue to study. It's weird how that works out. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's a self-perpetuating con job. That's what it is. But we keep shoveling money into it, grant after grant after grant from our federal government. We must study this. We must study that. Well, why don't we just declare it all bad? The science is settled. Once something's been studied, it should be settled science. Of course, if you look back at the history of science, so many things that were known to be true at the time by the brightest scientific minds on the planet at the time turned out to be wrong, turned out to be way wrong. And it's not just in the ancient past. Think about recent history. Think about your lifetime. I bet in your lifetime you remember being told to not eat so many egg yolks, right? The protein is all in the whites. Just eat the whites. Forget the yolks. The yolks are nothing but cholesterol and fat. You don't want any of that. That's all bad for it. It's going to kill you. What are you doing eating egg yolks? You're a monster. Why are you trying to commit suicide by food? Now we're told, don't eat the egg whites, eat the egg yolks. That's the only part that's good for you. Don't eat butter. Butter's going to kill you. Eat margarine. Margarine is the best. And now it's like, oh, wait. Well, you probably shouldn't eat margarine. You should probably eat butter just to be on the safe. It's healthier for you. They make stuff up. They find what they're looking for. That what they got money to look for. And then suddenly they find, once they're like, okay, science settled. Then they go, wait a second, we just screwed ourselves out of a job. We're going to scrape together the money that we have left and study something that will negate everything we've said before. And we're going to continue to do the same crap research over and over and over. Lather, rinse, repeat. And the government and private industry, the woke crowd just goes, well, here you go. Here's more money. Go out and find a food that we can say people should avoid. Give us something we can tisk people over when they consume it. And guess what? They do. They always do. That's how this racket works. I cannot stress that enough. Anyway, so there you go. Before we get into anything, though, before I go off on too many tangents and before I go off on the debates and start playing the audio, we've got to give a hat tip to our lovely sponsor. It is Wednesday. That means it's the day we go to the taped when we talk to Ronnie McMullen, the proprietor of GetTheTea.com, the guy, the mind, the genius behind Life Change Tea. Joining me on the phone right now is the founder of GetTheTea.com, one of our lovely sponsors, our favorite guy, Ronnie McMullen. How are you, Ronnie?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Derek?
I could not be doing any better if there were two of me. I was just at GetTheTea.com and I noticed that you have a special. You got a big sale going on. You got the super tea. And then there's something that intrigued me. Pine bark extract. Together, it's a great sale. But what, I think most people listening, what is pine bark extract?
Well, it's kind of a hidden gem. Pine bark in a little pill does so much. And let's just go real quickly what it is. It is an antioxidant power, which means it likes to beat up on free radicals. And we've all heard about free radicals and the damage they can do to our eyes, the damage they can do to our brain. So this is one of the top antioxidant powers. The other thing it does is it is vitamin C regeneration. It protects against cataracts. It improves heart health. It improves varicose veins. You'd think right now this is good enough for me. Wait a second, there's more. It improves blood pressure. It helps with glucose, with diabetes. It improves your memory because it's crossing that blood barrier. How about allergies and asthma, arthritis, fertility, protects skin, wound healing? I mean, this is, goes crazy. And then, of course, it is really good for your immune system. So everybody should be taking pine bark.
Every time I talk to you, I learn something new, Ronnie. I wonder what you do in an average day and you find this stuff out and you bring it to us. And you can get it all at GetTheTea.com. And you have a special deal for our listeners?
I do. I have a special deal. You get the pine bark and you get the world's best digestive aid, which is the tea. And let me tell you something. The reason it's so good, you can get digestive pills, and that's fine. But when you're dealing with a liquid, it moves so much good. And one of the key ingredients in my tea is milk thistle. And look that up, what it does for your gut. So when you have this something this good, that's a number one American number one digestive aid, and you get the benefits of pine bark extract, all in a deal. And then, of course, then the topper on that is if they say Derek in the coupon code and hit apply, you're going to get free shipping on top of that. You can't beat this deal. And by the way, the pine bark is a 4-month supply. You take one every other day, but you can sneak a little more if you need to.
You can't beat it. You always come up with something great. You always have the greatest information. Ronnie McMullen, GetTheTea.com, our health guru here on the show. Thank you for joining us, Ronnie.
Thank you.
Yes, I do love Ronnie McMullen, and you will too. Try his stuff. You'll be shocked. He's like, what's going on here? I don't know about this. Seems weird. No, it's legit. I use this stuff. So check it out. And don't forget promo code Derek and click enter for the discounts. All right, let's get into the debate because this thing was a feces show from start to finish. It wasn't so much a pile on Bloomberg fest as the last debate was, but there was a lot of piling on Bloomberg. I don't understand. If Elizabeth Warren isn't positioning herself to be Bernie Sanders' vice presidential nominee, which would be incredibly stupid for Bernie Sanders to go with. I don't know what she's doing if she's not doing that. She seems to be auditioning as his protector. She took a couple of swipes at him. Nothing really major, but she spent most of her time attacking Michael Bloomberg again. And the next vote is Saturday. It is the South Carolina primary. Michael Bloomberg is not on the ballot in South Carolina. He doesn't appear on the ballot for the first time until next Tuesday. So in 1 week on Super Tuesday when a whole bunch of states go. So attacking Michael Bloomberg before the South Carolina primary just is dumb. It's a waste of time and energy. Now, they've damaged Michael Bloomberg, and that's fine, I suppose, if that's all you want to do. But Elizabeth Warren hasn't really helped herself by attacking Michael Bloomberg because all she's doing is attacking Michael Bloomberg. There are other candidates up there, many other candidates that are polling higher than Elizabeth Warren. If she wants to climb a ladder, in a primary that matters to sort of register, to get on the radar, to build some momentum and try and have a chance of winning this thing, she's got to hurdle one or two of the people in front of her. And instead, she's not even attacking somebody behind her on the ladder. She's attacking somebody who isn't on the ladder at all. So if this is a theory. And this is a theory in politics that if you score really good points against somebody, that you will get some of their support. They'll lose some support. It'll disperse amongst the field, but you'll get some of it because, well, you're the one, you made a good point. You made them think, you changed a mind, you turned somebody off, and they thought, well, now maybe this person has a point. I should look closer at this person because they told me something I didn't know. They brought some truth to the table, whatever, however you want to frame it. There is none of that in Elizabeth Warren attacking Michael Bloomberg. No Buttigieg supporter is going to go, I was all in for Major Pete, but now that I learned this horrible thing about Mayor Bloomberg from Elizabeth Warren, I'm going to go to her. It doesn't happen that way. Supporters are with the person they're with until they're no longer with them, until they have either they drop out or you give them a reason not to stick with them. Or a reason to come to you. Attacking somebody else is not a reason to come to you, especially some third party who, you know, in South Carolina, there were 15 Bloomberg supporters because he's not campaigning there. He's not on the ballot. So there'll be some people who are going to just go in there and decide to write Michael Bloomberg on the ballot. Maybe you peel off four or five of them. Congratulations. You've spun your wheels in mud and wasted $5 million on your campaign in South Carolina to get five people. It would have been easier just to write five $1 million checks or something like that. So I don't understand what attacking Michael Bloomberg did. The supporters at this point of the people, with possibly the exception of Joe Biden, but Joe Biden supporters aren't going to go to Elizabeth Warren if they leave Joe Biden. And besides, I thought Joe Biden actually had his best debate performance. I know I said the last one was his best debate performance because he didn't have anything, any gaffes, any screw-ups, anything that he just was embarrassed by. This time, he had a couple of, like, Joe Biden moments where he's rambling on, and it's clear he forgets what he was talking about. He has he's been talking so long that he's lost his train of thought. And he pulls what he's pulled in every debate so far. He says, well, I'm out of time. Only this time, he says, well, I'm not going to stop talking because nobody else stops talking. Everybody else just blows right through the time. And then he stops talking because he was literally lost. He didn't know what he was saying. The moderators were terrible. Terrible, by the way. I meant to get into how terrible the moderators were before the ad, but they were feckless. They let them argue. I could play a clip of about 40 seconds in length where you cannot make out a single word spoken because it was seven human beings talking over each other, arguing over each other, yelling over each other, and the moderators sitting there silently. They let everybody go over their time. There's supposed to be like a 1-minute answer and a 45-second rebuttal if names were brought up, and names are always brought up, and everybody goes, that was talking about me, so I would like my 45 seconds to say, but I got blah. They just let it get out of control. People were interrupting everybody. At certain points, you didn't have any idea what the question was that set it off. It was so lost. It was like walking into a crowded bar and trying to pay attention to a conversation at the other end of it. You just couldn't. All you heard was talking, not words. That was a huge, huge fumble on behalf of CBS and on behalf of their moderators, but they were very proud of themselves. Then they were so progressive and woke that they had two women moderators. Oh, it's a historic night, two women moderating a debate. And then they did a horrible job. So I suspect you're not going to hear so much about the historic nature of the bathrooms that the moderators used. I assume they both identify as women. I don't know. I don't want to assume anything. But Joe Biden had a good night. Pete Buttigieg had a good night. He was actually attacking Bernie Sanders. He was criticizing Bernie Sanders, and very effectively. Whether or not it lands, I don't know. If you remember, this is kind of funny. It's a little on the personal side of it, but it's politics related. It's actually South Carolina primary related. I was doing my radio show yesterday morning, and I got an email from that predictit.org website where you can bet. It's like fantasy football for political nerds, and you can bet on who's going to win the primary, who's going to do this. They had prop bets where you could say how many times would over under and how many times billionaire would be said or socialist would be said, so on and so forth. Well, I clicked on the email that I got, and I went and I looked at the website, and it took me to the prop bets, and I thought, you know what, when I bet on Mayor Pete to win in New Hampshire and lost barely, but I lost my $50. I remembered I uploaded or deposited or whatever into my account $100. So I still had $50 sitting out there, less they're like 50 cent or a dollar commission, whatever it was. So I looked at South Carolina, and I saw that Bernie Sanders was favored to win South Carolina in their betting. And I thought, wow, that's new. I hadn't seen that. And so I went to the Real Clear Politics. I checked the polling, and Biden was still ahead in the polls by a pretty decent margin. And I thought, oh, crap, this seems like an easy bet. I can buy Joe Biden at like 37 cents a share and buy $50 worth, and then I'd win $120 if Joe Biden actually wins. I wasn't going to go through the rigmarole and figure out how to get a refund or whatever. I eventually was going to bet that money. I intended on betting that money when I uploaded it the first time. I just didn't realize that I didn't. So I put $50, my remaining $50, it ended up being like $48 and change, on Joe Biden to win in North Carolina. So I watched the debate, and I thought Biden had a pretty good debate. And I go, ooh, I wonder, because the odds are always changing. You know, where you bought in, it's locked. But I thought, ooh, maybe the chances, the sense of the public will have changed, and it'll look better for Joe. Because you can also sell your bets. If Joe Biden's chances of winning went up to 78%, 78 cents on the dollar, whatever, I could sell my Biden stock. It's kind of like more like a stock market. I could sell my Biden stock and still make a decent profit. That would be pretty cool. So I look, and hadn't really changed. I'm like, what? Well, all right, what are you going to do? And then I noticed, crap, I actually clicked on North Carolina, not South Carolina. So I didn't bet on South Carolina. Joe Biden is actually favored in the odds to win South Carolina, which makes sense. So I threw $50 on Joe Biden to win North Carolina, which Bernie Sanders is favored to win. But I did look at the polling, and there's a chance. There's a chance. Not much of a chance, but there's a chance. Hopefully, if Joe Biden does well Saturday, North Carolina will look at that, because they vote just on Super Tuesday. Maybe a bunch of fold over, flop over, whatever, will push Joe Biden over the edge. And I, your humble host, could end up turning $50 into $120, which would really be turning $100 into $120. And then when you sell it or you get paid out, I'm sure they take another cut. So it'd be like I got like $14 at the end of the day. But it keeps me interested. It's fun. So there you go. That's my I'm stupid story. Speaking of stupid, let's get into the debate audio, shall we? Like I said, Joe Biden had a good moment. I think it was the moment that he won the debate. I'll play that for you in a little bit. But I want to start off with one of his gaffes, because Joe Biden made a gaffe. He made a couple of gaffes in addition to him just stopping talking when he lost his train of thought. This one, I know what he meant to say. And like I said, if he were anybody else, you'd give him the benefit of the doubt. But after 300 senior moments, you have to go, this is a senior moment, right? Don't you have to do that? Eventually, don't you have to look at the situation and go, okay, this is a problem. It's not a personality quirk. It's not a neat thing. The guy's running around telling people that he was arrested in South Africa while trying to visit Nelson Mandela in prison. Says that he was trying to get to Robben's Island, even though it's Robben Island, and visit Nelson Mandela while he's in prison. And he was in Soweto, where he was arrested while trying to visit Nelson Mandela. The problem is that Robben Island is off the coast of southern South Africa, and Soweto is 900 miles away from there. So it doesn't really make any freaking sense. The Washington Post did a fact check of this claim that Joe Biden has made multiple times, but only this year, which again is weird. When you're pandering to black voters, that's what you get. And the Washington Post gave Joe Biden four Pinocchios for what they call a ridiculous claim. He's lying. He wasn't arrested. Then his campaign sort of changed the story. I saw tonight that they were saying, no. He went with the Congressional Black Caucus to South Africa, and at customs they tried to make him go through a whites-only door, and he refused to do it. And so they took him to another area and tried to convince him to walk through the whites-only door while the Congressional Black Caucus members were forced to go through the blacks-only door, and he refused. So they allegedly found some secret way through customs through a restaurant or something. It was a ridiculous story. It's such garbage, and it's so obvious that they're lying. If a United States senator were arrested in another country, it would make news. It doesn't matter what year it happened. It would make news. And there was no news whatsoever. And if Joe Biden were actually arrested while trying to visit Nelson Mandela, they would have, his office would have put out five dozen press releases on the subject within the hour. Anyway, that's just an interesting aside. Let's listen to Biden's biggest gaffe moment of the night. The number of people killed by guns since 2007. Turns out half the country has been murdered by guns since 2007.
It's caused carnage on our streets. 150 million people have been killed since 2007 when Bernie voted to exempt the gun manufacturers from liability. More than all the wars, including Vietnam, from that point on.
We know what he's trying to say, but that he so often fails at saying what he's trying to say is kind of telling about crazy, sniffy, gropey Uncle Joe Biden, isn't it? 150,000. Ballpark. I'm assuming he meant to say 150,000, because 150 million would literally be half the country murdered in the last decade and a half. That would be news. That I think support for gun control would, despite the Second Amendment, in spite of the Second Amendment, I think even the NRA would go, wait a second, we got a problem here. We're going to have to try and address some of these issues. Half the country being murdered by guns. But he doesn't, all the wars combined, including Vietnam and after. So he's trying to say all the wars since, including Vietnam and since then. And if the number is 150,000, he would be right. You know, he would be right. But it would be like triple that, actually, if he were talking about. But at the end part, I don't know what the hell he was talking about. All the wars, including Vietnam, and like Vietnam was not our deadliest war. It's bad. Lost tens of thousands of people, more than 50,000 people, but not 150 million people. And actually, if you include all of the wars that this country has fought, and just for good measure, you throw in the wars we fought while we were a British colony, I don't think you get to 150 million people dead in this country. But Joe Biden is Joe Biden, and you kind of look at that and you scratch your head and you go, you know, that's Joe being Joe. And that's the benefit of Joe being Joe. That's the benefit of the doubt that Joe Biden gets. That's the Biden pass. He's the only one who gets it. If somebody else makes, especially, God forbid, a Republican were known for 1/10 of the gaffes that Joe Biden regularly makes, they would be ruined. It would be over for them. But Joe Biden, they just go, yeah, you know what he meant. And they give him the benefit of the doubt. And I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt because people make these kinds of mistakes all the time. The problem is Joe Biden doesn't catch himself making these mistakes all the time or ever. Really. And that's really the ultimate problem with Joe Biden. I think what you watch when you watch Joe Biden campaign in many ways is elder abuse. You're sitting there and you're going, this guy should probably be in an assisted living facility or have some sort of I mean, Lord knows his kid made enough money during his vice presidency that he could afford at least a part-time caregiver to come in and make sure that Joe isn't caught wandering down the street in the middle of the day. Now, what am I talking about? Just the other day in South Carolina, you've probably heard this, but just in case you haven't heard it on this program, I want to play Joe Biden asking for the votes of South Carolinians to apparently become their next United States Senator, which was big shocking news considering the fact that Joe Biden not only doesn't live in South Carolina and therefore would make it pretty difficult to represent them in the United States Senate, he's never lived in South Carolina and he's not running for the United States Senate. Also, making this clip I'm about to play even more confusing is that there is no other Biden. There's no second Biden lurking in the woods. Hunter is still in hiding. As far as I know, he's not running for Senate from South Carolina. Maybe. He probably needs the work. But listen to this clip, and I'll expand upon it after.
South Carolina is going to determine who the next president of the United States is going to be. You really are. You're the ones that sent Bill Clinton to the presidency, and you're the ones that sent Barack Obama to the presidency. And I have a simple proposition here. I'm here to ask you for your help. Where I come from, you don't get far unless you ask. My name's Joe Biden. I'm a Democratic candidate for the United States Senate. Look me over. If you like what you see, help out. If not, vote for the other guy. Give me a look, though, okay?
He sounds a cross between drunk and confused, which often go hand in hand. But he definitely sounds drunk. I'm here to... My name's Joe Biden. I'm running for the United States Senate. Okay, you're from Delaware, why are you in South Carolina? That's a little bit weird. I mean, maybe there are some expats there from Delaware who could vote absentee for you, but I don't think it's a large enough demographic to warrant a campaign trip, Joe. Maybe you're running for president of the United States. And if you don't like me, vote for the other Biden. What? What in the hell is he talking about? See, this is what I mean. It's senior moments. Everybody knows somebody who's, you know, has these senior moments, parents, grandparents, whatever. They have these moments. My mother used to, I was the youngest of five, so my name was Kirkstate Frank Derek. That was it. It was the first part of all of my siblings' names in order of birth before she got to me when she was going to yell at me when I was doing something, making a joke or being bad or whatever. Not that I was ever bad, but that was just how it was. That was how she was. That's how the human brain works. Everybody makes these kind of little verbal gaffes, but people catch them. People correct themselves, even when they would be embarrassing. You know, Joe Biden sitting there coming to the big crescendo in the speech where he asked the people for their vote for president of the United States, and he says United States Senate. Then you just go, I mean, president of the United States. Sorry, folks, it's been a long day, you know, or blah, blah, blah. Campaigning all day, campaigning all week, campaigning all month, whatever it is. You make some kind of crack about that. You don't just plow on. But Joe Biden didn't just plow on. Joe Biden didn't notice at all. He didn't miss a beat. It was like he was reading prepared text. Maybe Joe Biden is like Ron Burgundy and he'll read whatever's in the teleprompter and one of his staffers decided to play a little prank on Sniffy Joe. Maybe he started smelling somebody's hair on the tour bus and they all thought, well, we got to get him back. We got to have a little fun at Joe's expense. And they put the United States Senate in there instead of President of the United States. But even then, Ron Burgundy would have likely Well, maybe not. He didn't notice that he told San Diego to go F themselves. But you get the idea. It is happening, and it happens too often in big ways. And it's never caught by the candidate at the time. Everybody else notices it, but he doesn't. And to me, that's a sign of something not right. The elevator not going all the way to the top, if you will. The bulbs not fully flickering all the way around the Christmas tree. That being said, there's still a pretty good chance that Joe Biden wins South Carolina. Back to the debate audio, okay? Because I'm going to get to a bunch of this as we possibly can, and hopefully some other things, but it's looking like it's going long. Elizabeth Warren, she's a little bit like Joe Biden, except that she does it deliberately. I honestly believe that Joe Biden misremembers things. I think he's goofy, and I kind of think that his transmission is slipping in a couple of gears. Elizabeth Warren knows full well what she's doing. She's just desperate and willing to lie about things. She brought back up the lie that she was fired because she was pregnant. Remember this lie? She'd been telling the tale to, because victimhood is aspired to. It's an aspired to status in the Democratic Party. And if you're not really a victim, you have to come up with some kind of way that you were victimized. If you're not currently being, and these people up on stage, they're all rich. They're all not really facing much hardship in their lives. So Elizabeth Warren, worth $10 million or more, probably more, her and her husband together. Her husband's got a pretty sweet-ass, high-paying job, tenured job at Harvard as a law professor. So he can't be fired, and he gets like more than $400,000 a year. It's ridiculous. She's selling a bunch of books. They've got money. They've got a lot of money. Plus, they used to do real estate speculation, house flipping, which they now decry as problematic because you're taking foreclosed homes. Elizabeth Warren had no such qualms about that concept when she was making bank off of it. But hey, what are you going to do? Different times. She wasn't a Democratic politician at the time. She came up with this story on the campaign trail about how she was fired as a teacher in the early 70s because she started showing her pregnancy. Now, it's important to remember that she was not fired, that she was not actually a certified special needs teacher at the time, but was given a waiver. And the waiver was renewed for another year. She wasn't a certified teacher. She had a contract for another year. And in a previous incarnation of her existence, she said in an interview in the mid-2000s that she decided to be a stay-at-home mom instead of going back to teaching. She just had a kid, and she wanted to be with the kid. That was the story she gave. Then suddenly when she was running for office, it became, I was fired because I was pregnant, and men are evil and mean and nasty, and they just discriminated against women, and I'm a victim. Well, the Washington Free Beacon, unlike, you know, massive major news outlets that have big budgets and send reporters traveling around the world to try and dig up dirt about Donald Trump, they couldn't send anybody to a local school board in, I believe, New Jersey to look into Elizabeth Warren's claims that she was fired because she was pregnant. Had they would have found what the Washington Free Beacon found, which were minutes from a meeting of the school board at the time, at which it was discussed that they were extending, because it was the only way Elizabeth Warren would have been able to teach because she didn't have her degree yet and she did not have her certification. They were extending the exemption for Elizabeth Warren for another year, inviting her back, very much looking forward to her being back in the classroom the following year. Then, later on, in other meetings, it was discussed that Elizabeth Warren had decided that she did not want to accept this one-year extension of her contract, this waiver that they were granting her, that she had decided to stay at home, which jives perfectly with the story she had been telling up until the point she decided to run for president. This was an embarrassment to Elizabeth Warren,
because it was a provable lie. They tried to lie their way out of it by saying that, you know, that was just the cover story that they gave to in the school board. It was, in fact, because she was pregnant that she was being fired. She was not quitting, even though even news reports at the time, local school board reports had her as quitting. So she decided to bring this back up in the debate last night because, again, victimhood is the aspired to status in the Democratic Party.
You know, this is personal for me. When I was 21 years old, I got my first job as a special education teacher. I loved that job. And by the end of the first year, I was visibly pregnant. The principal wished me luck and gave my job to someone else. Pregnancy discrimination, you bet. But I was 21 years old, I didn't have a union to protect me, and I didn't have any federal law on my side. So I packed up my stuff and I went home.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is a bald-faced lie. A flat-out bald-faced lie. I've just told you the truth about her story, and right there she just told you a lie. Why? Because, of course, being a victim is the aspired to status. It is the pinnacle. It is the king of the hill in Democratic circles, the top of the food pyramid. She went on from there. She then turned it into an attack on Michael Bloomberg, bringing up what is reported, has been widely reported, was a despicable thing he'd said to a former employee who was pregnant.
At least I didn't have a boss who said to me, kill it, the way that Mayor Bloomberg
never said that.
Have said to one of his pregnant employees.
You know, you hear Michael Bloomberg there denying that. Feverishly denying that, he went on to deny it even in more harsh terms, said he never said that, blah blah blah. The reporting is mixed. There apparently were witnesses at the time, claims that he was joking, so on and so forth. It doesn't really matter that Elizabeth Warren said this is the point, the joke, really, to be perfectly honest with you, because Elizabeth Warren earlier in the day voted against the Infants Born Alive Act, which is a bill that was proposed by, was written by Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska, that basically if a child, if a baby, if an infant survives an abortion, and there it is, outside the womb, outside, independent of the mother, and alive, it would have required the medical professionals there who take an oath to first do no harm, to in fact do no harm and treat that child and do everything possible to save the life of that child. Otherwise, it was punishable by, to ignore the baby, to let the baby slowly die painfully, as Governor Blackface Northam said in his infamous speech. That would be punishable by 5 years in prison. Elizabeth Warren voted against that. So she supported infanticide earlier in the day, and here she was being self-righteous about this situation. How big of a hypocrite can you possibly be? It really is. It never ceases to amaze these people. Oh, you told them to kill it. Yeah, you voted to allow infants, newborns, to die, you fraud. By the way, CNN wrote up this story on this bill, and they referred to the baby that they tried to abort that failed, that was born. They referred to it as a fetus outside the womb. Can you get any more Orwellian than that? And they compared it to a baby. They compared it to a baby as if it is not a baby. That's very bizarre. Actually, I'll give you the exact wording here. CNN said, the second bill to be considered Tuesday is the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, sponsored by Republican Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska, that would require abortion providers to work to preserve the life and health of a fetus that was born following an attempted abortion as they would for a newborn baby. or face up to 5 years in prison. Now, isn't that interesting? Isn't that really neat wording the way that, let me read that part again, the relevant part. It would require abortion providers to work to preserve the life and health of a fetus that was born, following an attempted abortion as they would for a newborn baby. What is the difference between a fetus that was born and a newborn baby? Well, one is something you want to kill because you just want it dead. You don't want to have any personal responsibility for 18 years for another living creature. You don't want to raise a child. You don't want to do, you don't want to change poopy diapers, whatever. So when you think of it not as a newborn baby, as they talk about the others, they just as a fetus that was born, it's still that clump of cells that's just outside the woman's body. It's a separate entity. It's not a human being. It's not a baby. It's a fetus that was born. The hoops, the mental gymnastics that you have to do to write that sentence, because you have to write as honestly as you possibly are comfortable writing about the bill, what it does, and that's what it does. So you have to, you can't say of a baby that was born following an attempted abortion as they would a newborn baby, or a baby that was wanted, or a baby that the mother didn't want to kill. You have to find some creative way to keep the liberal agenda hidden and happy. So you come up with a fetus that was born as opposed to a newborn baby. These people are sick. Elizabeth Warren on the debate stage going, oh, my God, you said kill it to a pregnant woman. You're a monster. Meanwhile, just a few hours earlier in the day, Elizabeth Warren voted against requiring doctors to preserve the life and health of a fetus that was born following an attempted abortion. Democrats tried to argue that this was some sort of anti-Roe v. Wade piece of legislation. And I don't know how you can impact the right of a woman to have an abortion when you're dealing with a separate entity, not a clump of cells. You're dealing with a fetus that was born, or aka a newborn baby. After it is already outside of the body, it becomes an independent entity and therefore should have rights and protections, even in the liberal mind. It has nothing to do with abortion. The abortion was performed. It just didn't take. And against the odds, the baby survived. But for the Democrats, no, if they want blood, they've got to have blood. They're really sick, disgusting people. Joining us now, somebody who isn't sick and disgusting, Quinn just wandered in. Hello, Quinn.
It's not seeing like any mummy, baby, get sleep and get pay quiet, get whisper.
Yeah, you gotta be quiet, you gotta whisper, because mommy and Bailey are sleeping. What are you playing out there?
PJ Masks.
In a shocking development, she's playing PJ Masks. Okay, go ahead and play. Daddy's got more audio to play. I did have, and maybe I'll put it on the show tomorrow, Ben Sass just ripped apart the arguments against this. It's a couple minutes long. I'm just not going to have time to get to it today, but it's definitely well worth listening to, because there's more debate audio won't be relevant tomorrow. This audio will be relevant tomorrow. I want to play a moment where you'd page Dr. Freud, to be honest. Michael Bloomberg actually had a decent debate. I mean, considering the last one when he crapped himself on stage. Anything short of crapping yourself on stage is a better debate for Michael Bloomberg. But he had a little slip up. Listen closely to this clip. You will hear Michael Bloomberg almost say that he bought the House of Representatives for Democrats. He almost says it. He talks about how he spent $100 million trying to get Democrats elected. And he's like, all these seats I bought, I helped, or he corrects him. I don't know what he says afterwards, but he says, I bought. And he stops himself because he realizes that it's probably not a particularly popular thing to say that to the party that hates successful people and people with money, to say that you bought an election. the money, the people who want to get money out of politics, never, they always, they're very good at raising money, but they always, you can raise a lot of money. You can make a lot of money decrying money in politics. Who knew? You can also make a lot of money being an activist for the poor. Again, one of those things you're like, how does that work? I'm a champion of the poor. How'd you get rich doing that? Don't ask any questions. I've got soup to go and stir. Listen to Michael Bloomberg make a near, he kind of caught himself, but everybody picked up on it, a near Freudian slip.
Let's just go on the record. They talked about 40 Democrats, 21 of those were people that I spent $100 million to help elect. All of the new Democrats that came in, put Nancy Pelosi in charge, and gave the Congress the ability to control this president, I got them.
Yeah, that House of Representatives, Democrat controlled. I got them. I bought it. I've got the receipts for it. I swear. I bought all of it. Oopsie. You got to be careful when you speak there, Mikey. It's not a good thing. Yeah, it's true. He did buy it, but he bought it legally. But he bought it. You should brag about it. These Democrats that are attacking him because of all the money he has. Oh, he's so terrible. He's so awful. These billionaires, they're trying to, every one of them would suck up to, if Michael Bloomberg dropped out of the race tomorrow, the next day these campaigns would each have a representative going up to Michael Bloomberg, wherever the hell he lives in Manhattan, going, Mike, do you think maybe you could help us out? Do you think maybe you could give us some money? Could we get some of that money? We love your money. We just don't want you. No, they don't have any opinion likely of Michael Bloomberg personally, to be honest with you. He's just one of their opponents, and he's an easy target given the way that the Democratic Party is now structured. Michael Bloomberg made a strategic mistake getting in late. He didn't do any of the legwork. He didn't do any of the campaigning. He's just trying to buy it. I mean, everything about his campaign is so bass-ackwards, it's really bizarre. It's fun to watch, and if Mike wants to throw me some money, I'll say some nice things about him on the podcast. I can't be bought, but I can be rented for a while, leased. Then we get to Bernie Sanders. And the last clip I'm going to play is the moment I thought that Joe Biden actually showed some life. The one time his indignation was actually seemed sincere, rather, because the seven people up on stage, they seem to have all hired the same consultant, one person. And that person's advice is volume equals passion. It doesn't matter what you say, as long as you say it loud into a microphone, you raise your voice, that will indicate to the audience that you care deeply about what you're saying. And that's, of course, not how it works, but it didn't stop any of them from trying. They were just all different forms of yelling. But that's neither here nor there to this clip. I just want to give one illustration of just how racist, I guess. Yeah, racist is the word for it. The Democratic field, the Democratic Party is, even the wokest of them all, the one that, you know, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the wokest of them all? And right there is Bernie Sanders, brother Bernie, looking back at you, scratching his head, wondering how he got into a mirror. Well, Bernie is talking, there were, of course, it's South Carolina, 20% or more of the Democratic primary voters are black. That means that everybody put on their pandering hats, and they all did their own form of pandering. We want reparations, we want this, we want that, so on and so forth. Bernie Sanders has I love how when they talk about drug legalization, you want to talk about racism. When they talk about drug legalization, it is always, we've got too many black and brown people in prison for drug deals and things like that. Is there a number that's too many of any type of person? Shouldn't it be just drug dealers? Doesn't matter what color they happen to be, who are, because it's not the guy with two joints caught in their pocket who's doing hard time at Rikers Island. It is, you know, the guys who are selling it. Usually kind of violent guys, because they don't really share well their turf. If they have an established corner, they're not going to go, well, somebody just moved in down the street. They're new to the drug dealing racket. that we're competing for the same customers, and out of respect for them, because I'd hate to see them go out of business, I'm going to go and move. That's not how it works. There's usually a conversation, a confrontation, and then a body bag is how this works. That's who we're dealing with. But Bernie Sanders, all the Democrats, like drugs, they immediately go, we have too many black and brown people in prison. I don't know the statistics. I don't care the statistics. I just know that 100% of the drug dealers in prison are drug dealers. And that's good enough for me. I don't really care what color they happen to be. Well, Joe Biden has a plan for drugs, while Mayor Pete is calling for the legalization of every kind of drug, whatever you want. You want to create a new drug and get wasted off of it. Knock yourself out. Prescription drugs they hate. Street drugs they want to make legal. They want to put the people who make prescription drugs in prison and let the people who sell heroin laced with fentanyl in back on the streets. It's really just a screwed up party. Well, Bernie Sanders, in an attempt to pander, just basically says his plan for drugs is also coupled with his plan to empower black and brown people. He wants to not only let anybody related to drug crimes out of prison, especially marijuana crimes out of prison, he wants to expunge their records, even though they willingly and knowingly broke the law at the time. Even if you change the law, it doesn't change that fact. And he wants to make sure that they can go into the legal business. He wants to give them the legal weed business, not the law. He wants to make sure that they get priority in going into the growing and distribution of marijuana. Not kidding. Here it is.
And I'll tell you what else we're going to do. We're going to provide help to the African American, Latino, Native American community to start businesses to sell legal marijuana rather than let a few corporations control the legalized marijuana market.
Yeah, shoveling black and brown people into the weed business. Is that that's progressive somehow? Here you go, black and brown people. You guys seem to have a natural predilection for distribution and monetizing this stuff, so here you go. Yeah, no, that's not racist at all, Bernie. Not racist at all. By the way, I don't understand the legal marijuana distribution business. Marijuana is a weed. Pot is a weed. You throw some seeds out in your backyard, and as long as you get enough sun, you're going to grow yourself some weed. You can put them almost anywhere. If it becomes not only decriminalized but legal, why would anybody need to go to a store for it? Honestly, maybe you go to the store one time, you pick out the seeds, and then you're in business for yourself. You don't ever need to patronize that place ever again. Or you just get your hands on some seeds and you go to town. It really, you know, Michael Bloomberg was ridiculed even on this show for mocking how difficult farming is, because growing crops that for agribusiness is very difficult. But seriously, literally, you just drop some, we don't even have to bury it. You drop some marijuana seeds on the ground, on the dirt, and it'll grow because it is a weed. It's called weed for a reason. So I'm not really sure that if they totally go the full legal route with marijuana, that it's going to be as lucrative a business as they say. Although maybe they'll say, you can buy it, you can smoke it, you can sell it, you can do anything you want, but don't you dare grow it unless you have a license. I don't know how you enforce that. But yeah, Bernie wants to push black and brown people into the drug distribution business. I suppose that's progressive. Now, as we wrap it up, I want to play Joe Biden's winning moment that I think that will be, if you're a Joe Biden supporter in South Carolina and you were concerned because of all the gaffes and because of losing three states and, you know, not really having a lot of energy on the campaign. There was one moment where I thought he really kicked ass, and it really didn't have anything to do with his answer. It has to do with the way he comported his lucidity and lucidity and lucidity and lucidity and life. Throughout this debate, the moderators were terrible, and everybody was yelling over everybody else. It was a free-for-all, as I described earlier today. It was the points in it, long stretches, 30, 40 seconds at a time, where you had no clue what was being said on the stage because literally seven people were talking over. The moderators weren't. They weren't even trying to get control over it, but the debate participants were talking over each other. Well, at one point when they tried to stop Joe from talking, they didn't really enforce the time clock on anybody else. Joe had enough. Joe was not going to put up with this crap anymore. And like I said, he showed signs of life. He showed some passion. He showed some interest. And I thought it was certainly his best debate moment of all the debates. And I think it would make an impression on people who were iffy about, if you're, you know, a dispassionate Joe Biden supporter before this, I think when you watched this moment, you thought, all right, yeah, I'm going to go vote for that guy.
Bernie, in fact, hasn't passed much of anything. The fact of the matter is,
but I get to answer.
Look, the fact is, here's the deal. I'm not out of time. You spoke over time, and I'm going to talk. Here's the deal. Look at what's happening here. We have to win the Senate back.
I told you it wasn't about policy, but Joe Biden actually showed flashes of life, signs of life right there. That is what I suspect a lot of his wannabe supporters had been looking for, hoping for in Iowa, New Hampshire, and Nevada. Instead, they get this guy who's like, yeah, you know, me and Barack, we used to hang out. Did I tell you that I knew Barack Obama? Did I mention that? Have you seen this picture? It's my screensaver on my phone. It's the lock screen. It's me and Barack Obama. Did you know that I know him? That was the Joe Biden the first three states got. Last night, Joe Biden woke up a little bit. He had a moment of lucidity, and he was not going to let the other candidates up there or the moderators steamroll him on anything. By the way, he's also right about Bernie Sanders not really ever having passed much of anything. He's got a lot of time in the Congress, in both the Senate and the House. He doesn't have a long list of accomplishments. Oh boy, howdy, does he have ideas. Crazy crackpot ideas, but not many legislative victories because he's insane. So Biden was right to point that out. Anyway, that is all the time we have, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate you listening. Tomorrow, CPAC starts. I'm going to go to CPAC as little as humanly possible. I have an interview lined up for tomorrow afternoon. Then I've got to go to CPAC for a bit. Maybe if I run into some cool people that I know, there could be guests on the show tomorrow. I'll bring my microphone with me. If not, it'll just be me again. We'll see. It all depends on... I always see these people and I talk to them and I always feel like a douche saying, hey, you want to do an interview? And I don't know. We'll see if I've overcome that or not. You'll just have to tune in tomorrow to find out. I will see you then. Happy Wednesday.
150 million people have been killed since 2007.